there never to be any peace aboard this damnable boat? Oh, they seem to care nothing for the presence of His Majesty's personal envoy.
I am certain that Captain Aubrey is according us every possible courtesy. We have taken his cabin, after all.
And surely he should at least put an end to this perpetual ritual of disturbance by cleanliness. Does he not realise that Your Excellency continues unwell?
The sickness has abated, Mr. Atkins, since we have encountered our present calm.
Calm, sir? I'm assured by many of the seamen that we are becalmed. We shall make no progress, or way, as they call it, for many a day yet. Oh, it's a wonder we stand it. The surprise is wallowing in our own filth. Oh,
for myself, my dear Atkins, I find it preferable to the wallowing in high seas.
Oh, it's disgraceful that the government should have us packed off all the way to Kampong on a pitiful fifth rate, when palatial East Indiamen sail this very course every week.
His Majesty's diplomatic missions must be seen to arrive by man of war, else what will the natives think of us?
You're too good, Mr. Stanhope, sir. They've put upon you and upon me since the very beginning of this detestable voyage. I am obliged to share a bed space, sir.
Will you be speaking to Captain Aubrey again?
I will, and in the strongest possible terms.
HMS Surprise by Patrick O'Brien. Dramatized in three parts by Roger Daines. Episode 2.
So, Mr. Carlo.
Yes, sir.
How many miles do you calculate we've been running in this dead calm? Make it from the 23rd, if you please.
284, sir.
Oh. You're out by 20. Oh. You must rework it.
How is the midshipman's mess feeding now, Mr. Carlo?
Very poor, sir.
Have you still your hen?
Oh, yes, sir. Thank you. We've given her all our bargemen, sir. We hope she may lay an egg.
You ain't down to Miller's yet, then?
Oh, we are, sir. Fourpence they've reached now. It's a goddamn... It's a crying shame, sir.
Millers?
Rats, Doctor. We call them millers to make them eat better. And perhaps because they're dusty from getting into the flour.
My rats will touch nothing but the best biscuit, lightly moistened with melted butter.
You are keeping rats, Doctor?
I wish to see how they come along on a special diet, Mr. Bullings.
And how do they do, sir?
They're obese, Mr. Callow. Their proud bellies drag the ground.
Do you know... There's a hole in the aftermost carling culver of the larboard berth. We used to put a piece of cheese there. We catch 3 or 4 millers a night on the Leeward Island station.
Was you a midshipman in the Surprise, sir?
I was indeed.
Good heavens, sir. She must be very, very old.
Well, she is, Mr. Callow.
It is not meat that we lack. Even fresh miller's meat will not answer. We do have scurvy aboard.
I hoped I was wrong.
But you'll set the men up directly, Doctor, won't you?
I wish I could share your confidence, Mr. Pullings. I fear our lime juice has been sophisticated. But I have hopes of these things, St. Paul's Rocks.
If the breeze don't die on us, you'll see the rocks quite close after dinner. Prodigiously curious they are. Gulls, boobies, and so on by the thousand.
Oh, I must see him. May I have a boat?
My dear Doctor... Had you remembered it will be Sunday afternoon, I'm sure you would not have asked.
Of course. The men's only holiday. I beg their pardon.
Perhaps you may find a volunteer, sir.
Would there perhaps be anything green grows upon St. Paul's Rocks at all?
Never a single blade. No water, neither.
I shall do my best with what we have, then.
It is a great comfort, you know, to have you around.
Like sailing with a piece of the true cross.
I do wish, gentlemen, you would get these weak notions out of your heads.
Oh, come now, Doctor.
Mr. Callow, I can purge you, bleed you, worm you, set your leg or take it off. But that is very nearly all any physician can do since Hippocrates and Galen.
Aha, remember, Doctor, Pullings and I have seen you trepan the Sophie's gunner. We saw the hole in his skull, the brain exposed.
Captain Aubrey, I desire you to step back. You are obscuring my light.
The silver plate clapped on, just so.
God's my life. Doctor, did you really do that?
And what is more, the gunner still lives. Mm-hmm. Headpiece are shining in the sun to prove it.
You will not gall us, my dear doctor. I know you will put our scurvy right directly.
Aik shir miragora kutahahe. Aik shir miragora kutahahe.
There is no landing this side. It's too steep, too.
It's very good-natured in you, Mr. Nichols, to pull me across.
Is that the language you speak with Ahmed?
Hmm? Oh, all Alaskans speak it. It's a kind of Indian lingua franca, it seems. I ply my phrasebook in the hope of fixing the colloquial. Mein chahat bol collector, mein chahat bol collector.
It quite astonishes me to hear you rattling away with those black men. I'm no hand at talking foreign languages. Even in English sometimes I find it impossible to say what needs to be said.
Do you know, I believe this book must have been compiled by a disappointed man.
I was ashore a long time, you know. Half pay.
A tiger has eaten my horse. I have been beaten by evil men. All my money has been stolen. I wish to speak to the collector. The collector is dead, sir. Oh, yet there is hope. Aurat tum juhut saf mein ga. Woman, wilt thou lie with me?
I had a disagreement with my wife. A bitter. When I was appointed to the surprise. You have heard this history before.
A medical man often hears Protestant confessions.
Forgive me then, I have already bored you. But it is a long, slow death match you're in. You cannot imagine.
I can.
In the middle watch, I used to walk up and down. Up and down, composing the answers to her letters. But there have been no letters.
They're sure to be sent on to Rio. You'll find them there, a whole bundle of them. Rely upon it.
No. There will be no letters anymore.
On deck there! White squall due south! Topsail high and nigh upon us!
All hands! All hands! Mr. Pullings, men into the fore shrouds! Fore staysails! Mr. Callow, pass the word for the captain!
How can any bird survive this?
What of the ship?
Oh, my boxes! Nichols! Mr. Nichols, will you lend me a hand here with my specimens? Nichols! Nichols!
Where are you?
Nichols!
The water appears to be coming in through the sides.
I'll not lie to you, sir. That is a grave sign.
Look on the relieving tackle there.
It is a scandal that His Excellency should ever have been sent off in so small a boat.
Ship, Mr. Atkinson. Ship
and which leaks.
All away!
I regret, Killick. I am not quite suited for sea travel.
Do you realise how very cold it is at sea?
Well, as to that, land is generally reckoned to be warmer, sir.
I shall never again undertake a sea voyage.
That may well be the foremast gone by the board.
Is the captain doing nothing to save us?
Yes, sir. He'll be a hacking away at the wreckage with a boarding axe now, if I know him. Of course, The damage that does to the hull.
Are we in extreme peril then, Killick? In your experience.
Horrible danger, Your Excellency, sir. We may founder. We may broach too. Or if, by the grace of God, we're not pooped, we may be driven head-on into Australia.
Is there no hope?
Very slight, sir.
Oh, Lord, save us!
But we may just possibly, with luck in these latitudes, we may meet with a mountain of ice. Amber onto it. As many as half a dozen of us might be saved.
We should start saying our prayers, Your Excellency.
That may well help, sir. Now, if you'll excuse, I must go destroy the code books. Huh?
Good afternoon, Doctor. I'm most heartily glad to see you. Should you care for a hand over the side?
No, no, I'm perfectly well. Nimble, indeed.
Yeah, you were very brown all over.
Oh, I've stood in no need of clothing for days, nor do I now. But I'm deeply concerned to tell you, sir, that the ship's jolly boat has vanished entirely, and Lieutenant Nichols with it.
Ah. I'm sorry to hear it. He was a very good officer. But you must be. You must go below and to bed.
Let me carry you, Doctor.
I will give you a hand.
Will you stop this? I have not the least wish to go below. A pot of coffee is all that I require.
No, Doctor, you really
no,
must.
No, sir, have I not told you I am... Mr. Stanhope, Your Excellency, I see you are much improved.
Allow me to congratulate you, Dr. Maturin, upon your happy preservation.
Wish you joy of your rescue, Doctor. May I fetch you a towel or some other garment?
You are very officious, Mr. Atkins.
His Excellency has undoubtedly seen naked men before.
This, however, is the garment in which I shall appear one day before God.
But His Excellency...
I find it answers pretty well, being what may be termed my... birthday suit.
Your Excellency, shall we go down to your quarters?
Good old doctor. Choked the jumped up bugger off.
Yes, there's one in his bleeding eye.
Oh, it was uncomfortable. I was roasted, to be sure. Desiccated. Mummified. But blessed be the sun in his power, for it has done astonishing repair to my sinews.
Well, I did remark upon you coming up the side almost like an able seaman.
I could dance an elegant jig.
Another cup.
I will.
What on earth did you do for drink on that infernal rock?
Ah, thank you, my dear. There remained but one single pool of rainwater left in a hollow.
Oh, good.
The birds continually, copiously... defecated into it. Fouled it to the point of nausea. But I drank it. And when my boiling, feculent pool had ceased to be a liquid at all, I turned to blood, tempered with a little seawater and kelp juice. Are you not having more coffee at all?
No. It's fortunate the squall permitted us at least to refill our water casks. And now we've picked up the southeast trade wind at last. I believe we shall weather Cape St. Rock after all.
Now, Jack, do you then intend to skirt eastern Brazil?
Well, we have already lost a great deal of time.
But citrus fruits and green vegetables, fresh meat.
There are many things must be taken into account.
Then come and look at my suppurating amputation of 5 years, my reopening once healthy wounds. Palpate the men's gums, why not?
Let me consider it, Stephen.
Very well. Then you will please to consider of this too. My rats have vanished.
Your rats? Did they escape in the squall?
The cage is undamaged. Its door was open. I turned my back for 5 minutes to take the air upon St. Paul's Rock, and my valuable experimental rats disappear.
What experiments were you conducting?
Rats I brought up by hand. Cosseted they were, crammed with the best double-refined madder, spite of their growing reluctance.
Why on earth?
The red is supposed to fix and concentrate in their bones. But no, now all is lost. The entire experiment is rendered nugatory. Is rat stealing another of your cursed naval customs, Jack?
You wish me to discover the culprit?
Oh, I shall know myself in time, for them that ate my rats will in their turn inherit the madder dye. And soberly I tell you, Jack, that if you persist in this, clap on my sail, lose not a moment, hurry, 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 then most of your people will surely be passing through my hands for dissection.
including, no doubt, that black damned thief of rats whose very bones will blush for shame.
My words between the doctor and the captain, Your Excellency.
I hope they will not be absent from our evening game of whist.
He pitches it pretty strong.
It is a pity there can be no privacy anywhere in a man of war. One is hard put not to listen.
I wonder a man of spirit can stomach such talk. I should give Maturin a thrashing directly.
You were not pleased to see him return, were you, Atkins?
Aye, sir.
Dr. Maturin is a wise source of impartial knowledge, especially as it is now clear that the sailors take an obscure delight in frightening us poor landlubbers. And then I am required to seek his guidance concerning our diplomatic mission.
Does your personal secretary then count for nothing compared to a ship's surgeon?
You play a fine hand of whist, Mr. Atkins. I should be lost without you.
We begin to see some progress, Joe. Oh, I beg your pardon.
No, stay, Doctor, if you please. Lieutenant Babington has something to tell you.
Lieutenant, is it now at last?
I have given him an order as acting third in poor Nichols' place.
Well, William Babington, I give you joy. Your apotheosis come at last.
I ate your rat, sir.
What?
I ate of your rats, sir. I've lived with a terrible conscience ever since.
Have you, sir?
I'm very sorry, sir. I ask your pardon.
I hope you enjoyed it, Mr. Babington.
He only ate it when it was dead.
It would have been a strangely agitated, hasty meal else.
It was a blackguardly thing to do, sir.
Tell me, did you keep any of the bones at all?
We usually crunch them up, sir. Some of the chaps did say they looked uncommonly dark, though.
Ah. Poor fellows.
Do you wish me to take notice of this theft revealed, Dr. Maturin?
No. No, my dear, none at all. Nature will, I'm afraid, take care of justice in this case.
What?
Could you tell me now, Mr. Babington, how many are still living in the larboard midshipman's berth?
Six, sir.
Including yourself?
Yes, sir, but I shall mess in the gunroom now.
Captain Aubrey, sir, can the services of those young gentlemen be dispensed with for a day?
With the greatest possible ease, Doctor. A week, if you choose.
It will not need so long. If you'll please to follow me to the sick bay, Mr. Babington, we will try to expurgate the damages you and your fellow ratagors have done.
Is this utter shambles ever going to look like the deck of a man of war? Mr. Callow? Mr. Callow!
Here I am, sir, begging your pardon.
It is fully 10 minutes since I told you to bring me the azimuth compass. Where have you been?
Only to the head, sir.
The head? Every single midshipman gives me the same excuse this watch. Jolliffe's at the head, Meadows Church at the head, even Mr. Babington. What is the matter with you all?
I think it's because we all ate something, sir.
I will not have this skulking, Mr. Callow. You will find yourself at the masthead pretty soon. Do you hear me now, sir? Why are you dancing?
Sir, if you please, the head, I have to...
Go get out of my sight!
What tum juhut sath minga?
Can't set a flower upon you, my dear Jack. The daughter of the horse leech is moderation made flesh compared to you this day.
We must catch the monsoon with a well-found ship, Stephen. I have only a week or so to snap up everything that can be moved from these Bombay yards before some damned swaggering first rate comes in screeching for spars and cables.
You're in a Tom Tiddler's ground, so you are.
Ain't I, though? Pitch, hemp, cordage, sailcloth by the acre. Natural-grown knees, Stephen. And the Admiral has been a prince. Said the kindest things about the surprise.
Yeah, he has a conscience, that's all, having relieved us of our first lieutenant.
Well, You cannot begrudge a man his first command. And Harvey is but a moderate loss in exchange for this largesse.
And again, the Admiral knows the importance of our getting His Excellency safe to camp on.
What is this constant chanting about, Mr. Babington?
The doctor has kindly lent me his Indian phrase book, sir.
But have you not progressed beyond woman wilt thou lie with me?
This is a man of war, Mr. Babington, not a floating brothel.
Sir.
Go and start that infernal slow belly of a carpenter.
Start the carpenter it is, sir.
Did you read your letters, Stephen?
They'll keep.
There were five for me from Sophie. Five. Damn me, Stephen, but she writes a splendid hand. You can make out every word. And what a style. Good as literature.
She is the pearl of the world, sure.
Lord, Stephen, I do so long to be married.
To know you safely wed, Sophia. That is my only wish, that I can die in peace.
You are not dying, Mama.
Is Sir John Butler to be overruled by a pert miss? Is the president of the College of Physicians inferior in diagnosis to an ignorant country girl?
I mean, you will get better.
Married, settled, with a man of brilliant prospects and handsome private means.
Mama!
A man who can make a proper provision for you, look after you when your mother is gone.
I will not marry Mr. Hinksey, Mama.
So comfortable, Swiving Rectory. So near at hand. Not a seaside lodging the other end of England or Peru.
I have no affection for Mr. Hinksey.
Oh, you are not indifferent to him, whatever you may say. Captain Aubrey will soon get over it.
You do not know him.
If indeed he ain't over it already, in the arms of some trollop like his precious Lord Nelson. Every man is a bachelor once he has passed Gibraltar. And unless I'm much mistaken, Miss, India is a very great way beyond Gibraltar.
If you had read Jack's letters to me...
I have. I only speak for your own good, my dear. I implore you, do not refuse me this one, this last request.
What an agreeable city it is, where a man may walk naked in the heat if it pleases him.
God will not be merciful to him that wears long trousers for vanity, my Stephen.
A Muslim teaching. Where got'st thou that, child?
There is a European carriage. See? Filled with Franks it is. Poof, I can smell them from here.
How so?
They eat cow and pig. It is perfectly notorious. Art a Frank, my Stephen, at times. Hast eaten thou?
Not for some days.
That is why thou smell'st not stronger than camels, then. Like to a Frank. I have a whole leaf of bondo. Come, we eat it before it spills, Maharaj.
Jack.
Ah, Stephen.
Allow me to name Dill. She is my particular friend and guide here in Bombay.
Thou art the most obese of Franks? I have nearly never seen a bigger.
Miss Dill, your servant. Hmm? Is she another of your collection of specimen curiosities, Stephen?
She's collected me, rather. Hmm.
So is she always with you?
I was offered her for 12 rupees. The ancient gentlewoman proposing the bargain was quite insistent to show me the fibula that guarantees the child's virginity. Quite superfluous. What could be more virginal than thee, my Dill?
Hmm. You did not buy her.
Didst not have the money, Stephen?
How old art thou? 9? 10? Could I preserve her, I might.
On board of a man of war?
In a year's time, she will be in a brothel, perhaps less. But would a European house be better? Would she make a servant, washed and confined?
Mm. You could keep her as a pet.
For how long? Observe what happens in the matter of course to my live creatures once brought onto your ships, Jack. Are they not eaten, debauched with drink, or pining unminded until their brightest colours fade into dull grey?
Does she have anything to say to the matter? What does she desire?
Bangles. Silver.
All the other children here are encumbered with them. They clank as they go.
Thou dost also, the big Frank.
Oh, hellfire hot to carry a sword around, too. But I had to dine with the Admiral. And I heard something there, Stephen. Made my blood run cold.
A French squadron is at hand?
Diana Villars is here. And her man, Canning. Ain't you amazed?
No.
By God, I wish the ship were ready for sea. I couldn't stand the meeting with her. Not after all that business. Truly, are you not shocked?
I'm not. That business is long ago. You were to be married to Sophie.
I am.
And for my part, I look forward extremely to meeting Villiers again. She and Canning are not, in fact, in Bombay, but expected on the 17th.
The 17th? And you knew all this? You are a close one, Stephen.
I suppose I am. I have to be, you know. That is why I'm still alive.
Tell me, did Sophie know that Diana was in Bombay?
And do you, Stephen?
Oh, yes. I know she is there.
I hope I've not hurt you.
Never be distressed, honey. I know Villa's faults as well as any man alive.
Of course, she is still very beautiful.
She is. By a little small, ugly man.
Oh, Stephen. You know, if she loves you, just a little.
What I know, Sophie, my dear, is how to wait. To be her pis-aller, if necessary. The man she may accept when at last she can do no better.
How could Diana be so cruel? It's like hitting a child.
That is my only hope.
Stephen, the Maharaja chiefs. That is the Peshwa in the middle. And there, the Bonsri Raja. What is a mace with thee, my bear?
Nothing.
But close thy mouth. Thou hast 15 teeth above and one less below. Thou gapers like a bear, too. Art sick?
No. No. I'm quite composed. I see a friend, that is all.
Stephen Maturin.
Damn it, Villiers, where are you off to now?
Stephen, upon my soul and honour, Stephen Maturin, how glad I am to see you.
Well, I am glad to see you too, my dear.
But how in God's name came you to be here?
By sea, by ship, the usual way.
You are very, very brown.
Your skin is fairer even than I saw it last.
Stephen, tell the woman to take a foot off my guitar.
Oh, daughter, I beg thou wilt forgive me.
This is Dill, my guide and boon companion.
Oh, thou dost not smell like a friend.
I am scented, Dill Gudaz. Atar from Oud, melter of hearts.
Villiers, we're pining here without you.
Stephen, come and see me. I cannot stay now. Child, dost know the Jain temple beyond the Black Pagoda?
I know.
Hard by that is my house. The white one with a walled garden.
Villiers, dash it all, we'll miss the sea.
Bring thou him through there tomorrow night, I pray. He will certainly be lost without a wise hand to guide him.
He is always lost.
Bring him, and I will give thee 3 wishes. Goodbye, Stephen. Till then.
Drive on. Understand it. Oh, Krishna, Krishna ji. Oh, Stephen Bahadur does not understand her. She is wooing thee.
Perhaps my understanding is not so good as thine.
She wishes to see thee by night. Oh, shameless. She has chosen thee because thou art not like the other Franks, her suitors. For they are rich and thou art poor. They are young and thou art ancient. They are handsome red-faced men and thou...
And I...
Oh, most holy men are hideous. The festival comes to its apogee. Oh, has flowers. Then we must run. Hurry, hurry. Down to the sea.
Stephen.
My dear.
I am still amazed to see you standing here like a dream. Lady Forbes, may I introduce Dr. Maturin? Dr. Maturin, Lady Forbes, who is so kind as to live with me.
Your servant, ma'am.
How do you do, sir? So happy. He is an odd-looking bugger. Streak of the tarbrush, I dare say. Was you born in India, sir? I remember some Maturins on the Coromandel Coast.
Have you eaten yet, Maturin?
I've not.
Raghunath, champagne and food.
Ooh. Thank God she's called for champagne. I am fair parched. She must think the young fellow worth it. Did you have a good passage, sir? What did you come in?
A frigate, Lady Forbes. The Surprise.
Such an appropriate name. You could have, do not berate me, Stephen, if I say, knocked me down with a feather. Do you like my trousers?
Extremely.
He's not blind, at least. He can appreciate firm round legs beneath blue muslin. Such a garment is very good in this heat, sir.
I am certain of it, ma'am.
Does Aubrey command surprise? Oh, of course he must, else you would not be here. Is he married yet?
We saw the announcement in the Times.
I believe the nuptials are to be any minute now.
All my Williams cousins will be married. Ah, here is the champagne at last. I hope you are as thirsty as I am, Maturin.
I am. Oh, God's my life. What has the queer beggar done to his hands?
Stephen?
It is of no consequence.
But your fingers, the nails.
They were injured, caught in a machine. But it'll soon pass, is already much improved. See, I can hold a glass with but a little shaking.
Then we should drink to health and happiness.
Health and happiness.
Health and happiness.
Mr. Pullings, where is the doctor?
None of the men has seen him for over a week, sir.
Does he not realize he was required to be present at the last muster? That his stores in the sick bay must be provisioned before we sail?
I believe Mr. Stannard mentioned having seen him and Mrs. Villers at Elephanta Island, sir.
Mrs. Villers has returned so early. I had hoped to sail by the time. Is it not enough that Babington be harpooned by a lamentable trollopy wench the moment he steps ashore without... Mr. Pullings, you will please to keep a reliable man of your division to seek out Dr. Maturin. Watch and watch, do you hear?
Sir.
And when we do lay hands upon him, I stand pretty fair to put him under arrest.
That is false! Did not hop there! A blind hyena could have seen thee stagger and touch the ground.
Heaven and earth will witness that thou art cheated, my Dill.
Stephen! Are we to go to thy bride house? I'd so very eager.
No, I have another service to beg of thee, to take my letter to the ship.
Oh, we'll go alone to the bedroom, Lala. There is no justice in the world. If I do not go with thee, then where are my three wishes that she promised?
Here. The first wish. The second. And here is the third and last.
Worship you, Stephen, silver giver, bridegroom.
Thou'rt so alive, child. Art not afraid to take my letter in the dark of the moon?
I want to go with thee. We show these to the sweet-smelling Frank Bride.
The letter is important. It will put me right with my friend Aubrey.
Oh, the fat blue Frank with the golden shoulder. Give me the chit. I fly to his ship. Straight to the ship!
She will be a woman all too soon, Stephen. Silver bangles then will not delight her. Look at me.
I do. Villers, I'm minded to purchase her.
You will be a great simpleton if you pay 12 rupees for her, Stephen. 3 is more the mark. She is probably an untouchable, you know.
Is that much out of a difficulty?
Christ, Maturin, I should know. A fallen woman, none better. Oh,
what stuff you talk.
Do I? The kept woman of a married man, who never goes out without the danger of an affront, alone, cooped up in this foul place all the time.
I have Lady Forbes for companion.
Oh, at least I know her secret mind. But the other women, Maturin, you have no notion of how they can place their darts. Nothing obvious, for I can hit back, and Canning could break any one of their husbands, but this is a vile life, Stephen.
I'm sorry that you should not be happy, but it does at least give my proposal a perceptibly greater justification.
Are you going to take me into keeping, too?
No. I have never made a woman an offer of marriage. I'm sorry for my ignorance of the accepted forms, but I beg you will have the goodness, the very great goodness, to marry me.
It would oblige me extremely, Diana.
Why, Stephen? That is the kindest thing.
Do not mistake me. This is not born of pity. It is deliberate, long meditated, matured over 12,000 miles and more. I'm painfully aware that my appearance does not serve me.
Your poor nails will grow again.
As if that will make all well. There are great objections to my person, birth, religion. My fortune is nothing in comparison with that of a wealthy man.
Stephen, darling, what kind of a wife could I make for you? Think what I have been, what I am now. Stephen, are you unwell?
Sure, I've never felt the heat so much.
Oh, take off your coat. Drink some iced water. Your neckcloth? Oh, pray, do not look so wretched. Come, put on this light gown, and we will sit in the court for the fresh air.
No. No, do not move.
Why? Because it is Canning's gown? Because he is my lover? Because he owns me?
I'm not the penniless nonentity I was when we first met. I have about £10,000, I believe. There's also my pay, 200 or 300 a year.
And a castle in Spain? I know it has a marble bath.
And a marble roof, where it has a roof at all. It is a romantic ruin surrounded by romantic mountains. But romance does not keep away the rain, Villas.
You are undoing all your work. I wish I could make you happy. I must think. Let us talk about it again. When you have set the old gentleman, his excellency, down in Kampong, you must come back to Calcutta, I collect.
Shall you be there?
I must have time to think. Months and months. You have gone quite pale. Oh, Stephen, it is not, no.
Here you are at last, sir. I'm right glad to see you.
That is kind of you to say so, Bond.
Where have you been?
Why, what's up?
All hell, sir. Captain Hawper's in a terrible taking. Reefers and ship boys relay each other here at your lodgings all hours. Every one of us afeard to report no sign of you. Poor Mr. Babington in irons, and young Messrs. Church and Callow flogged in the cabin with his own hands, and didn't he half lay it on, my eye. They held as piteous as cats, sir.
What has brought him to this?
Well, we reckon the captain must have word of the French. No liberty. All shore leave stopped, every hand at it, working double tides. Drive, drive, drive. We had not a dead eye turned in on Tuesday, yet we rattle down the shrouds today and we sail on tomorrow's tide.
And tomorrow is the 17th, is it not?
I wouldn't have believed it possible, sir. And all the time, where's the doctor? God damn you, sir, can't you find the doctor, you perishing swab?
Well, now you have, Bondon.
Well, here's a chit he gave me for you, sir.
Surprise, Bombay. Sir, you are hereby required and directed to report aboard His Majesty's ship under my command immediately upon receipt of this order.
Dated 3 days ago.
We've been handing it to one another by turns, sir.
Well, I shall read it tomorrow. Captain Aubrey will have my letter by now in any case. I sent my fleetest-footed messenger.
Sir, he'll call me a fool and I don't know what all if I come back without you.
Barrett Bondon of my heart, you are not obliged to hurry to the ship. I shall be there before she sails.
Dr. Maturin, I am surprised, sir, that you should behave in such...
I'm sorry, Captain. I'd thought to have sent you a letter to explain... To explain.
My doctor, what is wrong? What is wrong? Stephen.
I do beg your pardon, Jack, for my inexcusable lateness. Disappearance.
You're quite pale. Grey is more the mark. Are you not well?
I fear that I am unwittingly responsible for the death of a dear friend.
Not Diana?
No. No, I left her well. It is the child.
The girl?
Dill is her name. I sent her to the ship, this ship, last night with a letter for you, to explain where I was, what I was doing.
I never received it.
I know.
I don't see...
Do you remember the child's intense desire for silver bangles, Jack? So that she could ape the other children? I gave her her wishes, the soul. And I had resolved finally to pay down my 12 rupees for her.
You would have brought her aboard.
I would have bought that most living of things, a child. I went out in the cool and cleaner air of early morning, the general stirring in gathering market streets, the alley where Dill lived, the triangular booth made of planks and wedged up against a crumbling buttress, the old woman, her keeper, and Dill. I have seen too much death. The people were kind. The old woman was calling upon the crowd for money, for her funeral pyre. Sympathy. Praise. Small offerings added to her bowl, but they're desperately poor. Famine is coming. Their coins did not amount to half a dozen logs. One said,
"It is cruel pity. Our own people should have seen to the fire. But here is no one of our caste, sir."
"I am of her caste," I said.
"Tell the woman I will buy the child. I will take it down. I will attend to the fire."
Her face was infinitely calm. The wavering flame made it seem mysteriously to smile. Her arms showing the marks where her assassins had torn off those silver bracelets. Those wishes. It was the dawn. Pale flames in the sunlight. The column of soul smoke rising, rising on the sea breeze.
Deus. Cuius miseratione anime fidelium requiescant, unc tumulum benedicere dignare, eque angulum tuum sanctum deputa custodem, et quorum quorumque corpora hic sepeliuntur, animas eorum ab omnibus absolve vinculis delictorum, ut in te semper cum sanctis tuis sine fine latentur. Requiem aeternam dona ei, Domine, et lux perpetua luceat ei. Requiescat in pace. Amen.
In HMS Surprise by Patrick O'Brien, dramatized by Roger Daines, Captain Jack Aubrey was played by David Robb. Dr. Stephen Maturin by Richard Dillane. Sophie Williams, Liz Sutherland. Preserved Killick, John Glover. Lieutenant Pullings, David Holt. Midshipman Callow, Carl Prekop. Barrett Bonden and Arthur Stanhope, David Timpson. Mrs. Williams, Leslie Nicol. Diana Villiers, Ajua Ando. Lieutenant Nichols, Dan Starkey. Tobias Atkins, Stephen Critchlow. Midshipman Babington, Chris Pavlo. Other parts were played by the cast. The play was directed by Bruce Young.